the man with the game information. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Giving the news to the nerd generation. Gaming Steve. Give me news.
Give me news.
Give me views.
Give me views.
Gaming Steve.
Gaming Steve. He got the game.
What's to see?
What to see?
What to mean?
What to mean?
Gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who went out with Zelda and then dumped her, ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Stephen Glicker, and in this week's show, I have the latest game news. I think something like Spore, is that what it's called, was announced or something? I then have a review of Uncharted Drake's Fortune for the PlayStation 3. I then have Name That Game, my weekly contest. I then have Show Mail, where I answer your questions, and then Final Thoughts. So, yay, our good old friend Spore has come back almost 3 years to the day, well, not really, a little less than 3 years from when it was first announced. If you remember, the very first thing I ever reported on the show was I was at Game Developers Conference 2005, and I was right in the center watching Will Wright report Spore. I was one of the first sites to report on it, and ever since then, the site, it really, a large portion of the site's popularity is due to Spore, of course, as we do have one of the largest, if not the largest, Spore forum communities. As soon as the news broke, I, of course, wrote to the dev team and asking them, hey, why don't you guys let me know about that? Because even I was unaware of that, and they sort of like snickered at me a little, but, you know, they said that's all in good humor, that, you know, of course, as new information comes out, for more of the community aspect than, say, the news aspect, I'm going to get a lot of that information. Actually, I'm kind of getting both the news information as well as the community. But in a weird way, it's good to have both. But the news people, you know, they'll get a lot of the information now, but they have a different functionality. Their functionality is to, you know, like the Newsweeks and the New York Times of the world, is to give out, you know, news and information to the masses, while community really gets all the goodies. So of the two sides, I'd definitely rather be on the community side, because we get all the little tidbits, we get all the extra, you know, fun things that aren't released to normal people. You know, we'll get editors early, we'll get tools early, we'll get all that stuff, because, you know, as much content as there is in the game, they're going to have to, you know, supplement the actual game when it ships with a huge amount of content. And no big surprise, it's been reported this week that the creature editor is going to be announced and given out early before the actual game comes out. Whether it's actually going to be given out or sold, no one's exactly sure when it's going to come out, how that whole thing is going to work. If it works similar to the way The Sims was released, is that, you know, Will Wright is very, very good at doing pollinated content and doing a very stagnated release schedule. And what he often will do is that he looks at things from 6 months out, 4 months out, 3 months out, 2 months out, a month out, 2 weeks out, a few days out. In fact, that's even how The Sims is designed, if you think about it. It's like you always have something to do within the next minute, day, week, month, year. You know, you always have these things. He gave a good talk on this at GDC a few years ago, is that, you know, first they would release, you know, some of the, like, little pieces here and there on The Sims, and then by the time it came out, you know, and then they released editors, fan site kits, and so forth, and by the time The Sims came out, they had so much content on the web, people who enjoyed The Sims could immediately customize it, change it. So I'd be surprised if Spore, which is designed to do nothing but customization and changes, doesn't follow a similar pattern, if not a more robust one. My only issue is that, you know, this game is such a monstrous game for EA now, is that, you know, the difference between, say, their financial goals of how they handle the PR marketing versus the community goals, I hope the two don't conflict too much. But You know what? In the long run, the community has to be sustained. So, you know, they really have to develop long-term relationships with sites like ours. So, you know, I'm definitely right on the very, very forefront talking to the dev team as well as the PR managers all the time. You know, write them emails. They write back nearly immediately. At GDC, I'm going to be seeing them all. And, you know, they all know me by, in fact, last time I went, actually, they said hi to me. I didn't even see them. So, you know, I'll definitely be seeing them and catching up with them and see what's going on. And as we get more and more Spore information, you know, I will definitely let you guys all know. And by the way, as you know, is that we have a lot of writers on the site now, a lot of new ones, and they've been working out pretty well. It just allows me to actually free me up to do other things like improve the site, do some back-end programming, things you guys aren't even seeing that are being done, and also just cultivate new relationships with other managers, PR companies, things like that. But I'm looking for a full-time writer for, not full-time, but a writer for the site that will just cover Spore and nothing but Spore. You know, we have a couple of writers. Some of the people, you know, do different beats, if you'll notice. You know, we have Chuck, who does the role-playing games. You know, we have Clayton, who does sort of the news information. We got Matt, who does his crazy pieces, things like that. So, you know, everyone kind of has a little beat. So we're going to be looking for someone who can do just Spore and nothing but Spore, because there's just going to be a ton of information. So I just want to make sure that we're always kept, you know, on top of that. If you want to apply, there's actually an application form in the Spore forum under Spore General. How many times can I say Spore? Spore, Spore, Spore. Anyhow, or you can just write me a feedback at Gaming Steve and I'll send it to you. So either way, and this is an interesting show. I wasn't going to do a show before GDC because at GDC I'm going to be doing a ton of shows. But with the announcement of Spore, I figured I should, you know, do something just to acknowledge it. And also, I do have some emails, things like that. And I owed you guys a show because I didn't have one for a little while. I actually went on vacation. That's one of the main reasons. And then when I came back, real world matters became a bit too pressing for me to get one done. But I just wanted to sneak one in while I had a little bit of free time. So after that long diatribe and saying Spore how many times, I can't imagine. I imagine that'd be a fun little drinking game for you guys. See how many times I say that. Let's get to the news.
Gaming news. Gaming news.
So as everyone knows by now, Spore was announced pretty much a sneak attack that it's going to be coming out September 7th in the U.S. for the PC, the Macintosh, and the DS, as well as the mobile devices. And I believe in Europe it's coming out on September 5th. That is kind of a strange day, at least in the U.S. It's coming out on a Sunday, and a couple people wrote me emails asking me about that because, you know, most games, you know, except for really Nintendo, come out on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. One of the main reasons they do that is just because they actually ship them. A lot of these games will actually be shipped on Monday and then show up at the stores on Tuesday, and then they put them out that Tuesday. Or, believe it or not, the games are shipped, get to the main shipped from the manufacturer on Monday. They get to the main warehouse on Tuesday, and then from Tuesday they ship it out to all their stores. Like EB, you know, might ship it out to all their stores on Wednesday. So that's kind of why they do it that way. And a lot of these companies just use UPS. They have, you know, they just use standard mail services. So that's why they can't do it on a Sunday. And Saturday is much more expensive for delivery. So they just do it during a normal work week. So to release a game on a Sunday is pretty tricky, because that means you have to ship the game out early. You have to ship the game out like on a Wednesday or a Thursday to have it get into the stores. And if you do that, there is a chance that there could be leaks. For example, like this just happened with Professor Layden and the Curious Village. You know, it got shipped and then Walmart accidentally and some Best Buys put it out, even though they shouldn't have. And, you know, it was being sold a couple days before release. This also happened with Mass Effect, if you remember. So, you know, there is a risk to shipping these games out a few days early. I imagine, though, that EA, considering this is one of the most hyped games of all time, they're going crazy with this. They're going, you know, from the PR people I've spoken to, you know, they're going to every single mainstream press known to the world. You know, they're not just going to gaming sites. In fact, gaming sites are like nothing compared to things there. You know, they're serious. They're going after New York Times, Newsweek, Time, Wall Street Journal. That's who they're, you know, USA Today, that's who they're really trying to cover. Today Show, you know, I will not be surprised if you see Will Wright in Today Show. That's who they're really trying to hit because they want this thing to become a cultural phenomenon and to take off. And EA is really betting the, you know, literally betting not the entire company but a large portion of their revenue on this single game, because without Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter is now running its course, you know, they have two monstrous holes to fill. And you know, people are like, oh, is it going to be coming out for the PS3? Is it coming out for the 360? Let me tell you, I wouldn't be surprised if this thing comes out for the Atari 2600. Okay, this thing is coming out for every single system known to mankind. Okay, a Vectrex version, I believe it. All right, of course, they're all going to be different. Like, for instance, Spore Creatures, which, you know, is Spore-esque, is going to come out for the DS. I personally think it looks pretty cool, but, you know, and it has the attitude and, like, say, the methodology and, you know, that Spore has, that you're building creatures, but it's not Spore. It's not really the same game. And the DS, the mobile version, which is strangely almost looks better than the DS version, will also be like that. So yeah, this Spore is coming out for every single system known to the universe. I promise you that. You know, it's just that they're trying to figure out how to get them to work, because really, if you look at the PC game, and you know, when you hear PC gaming is dead, the PC game is beautiful, and on top of that, it's extensive. There's a lot in there. A Wii simply can't handle what's going to have in the PC. I know a lot of Wii fans are not going to want to hear that, but you know, even just the AI. I mean, one of the big problems with the Wii and its horsepower is that things like AI you don't think about really get sacrificed, because if you don't have a lot of memory and a lot of horsepower, you can't, you know, forget about graphics and all of that. Things like AI and pathfinding and, you know, stuff that really has to go on in the background really gets sacrificed big time, while you have something for, like, you know, the 360. The 360 version should look identical to the computer version, and the same thing for the PS3. So, yeah, it's going to be a pretty exciting couple of months. What do we got? About 7 months down. I would say this timing does not surprise me at all. I actually posted about this in the forums. I knew they were going to release. I knew they were going to have a 6 month schedule. So 7 months doesn't really just surprise me, because for the, as I said before earlier, The Sims had a 6 month pre-release schedule for content for fan sites and the community. So this is 7 months. This makes total sense. I knew something was happening in January because I spoke to them and they said, hold on, things are coming. We got like sort of a pre-announcement, a secret one to some sites. So I kind of knew what was going on a little bit. So none of this is surprising. And the timing is good. It was right before Game Developers Conference. GDC this year is turning weird. I've been going to Game Developers Conferences for 10 years, and in a weird way, I really miss the old ones. It's my favorite show in many ways. I enjoyed it more than, well, E3 is sort of dead. I enjoyed it more than E3 because it was a small, fun show with just a couple thousand people. But now, you know, it's like 16, 20,000 people there. You know, E3 is sort of come something weird. So this is the only show that they can really go and announce things. So next week, I imagine there's going to be a million announcements by everyone, very similar to what you saw at E3 and even GDC last year. Not a lot being shown, mostly announcements. So they got ahead of the wave on this. You know, they weren't lost in the shuffle. They basically caught everyone by surprise. You know, they got everyone sort of revved up. I tell you, it revved me up. As soon as I was just sitting there, and I just got the email, and I was like, oh, man, and posted as fast as I could that, you know, Spore was coming out. And all week I've been busy just emailing people, and it's really gotten the blood flowing. So I will be keeping up on this, of course, you know, putting out some major announcements here and there, doing, you know, coverage, interviewing the dev team, putting out any, you know, advanced tools that we get. But as I said, I speak to them on a fairly regular basis, so definitely be on the lookout for more Spore. I might bring back Spore Talk. If you guys remember way back when, I used to talk about Spore on a weekly basis. I don't know if it's necessary just because so much information is being released on all websites, not just ours. So, you know, if anything, I'll just try to always keep on top of it just so that I'm always, you know, in the know for the latest. And by the way, I never really thought of myself as part of a cult, but if you read the latest Penny Arcade, they do a very funny issue about the Spore and it being a cult. And I have to say, they're not always funny, but when they're on, they're on. So with that, let's get to the rest of the news. So something I found kind of funny is that, and I don't know why this was news, but they were going on, there's a recently a DICE summit, and it's a highfalutin summit in Las Vegas. Every year I kind of want to go, but it's always at a bad time, where sort of DICE has become what GDC used to be, is really the big wigs in the industry and only the developers really get together to talk about games. And DICE has sort of turned into that. And at that talk, they had Blizzard talking, and they had a list of all the games they canceled. And everyone was like, oh, wow, look at all these games Blizzard canceled. They had games like Games People Play. This is a game they were developing, one called Cruxa, one called Denzin, Nomad, Rakio, another one called Shattered Nations, and, of course, the infamous Warcraft Adventures, Lord of the Clans. And this made a lot of news. As someone who develops games for a living, it's funny because, yeah, you know, this is pretty much standard. Do you think that they just woke up and they decided to do StarCraft and that's it? Or even PopCap, do you think every single game they release just happens to be a smash hit? No, they will do games. They will develop them pretty far, totally secret, you know, do prototypes, you know, statement works, things like that. And if they don't work and if they have problems with the games, they'll cancel it. You know, Command & Conquer 3 is a perfect example. That game was designed several times before it actually got released last year. They went through many iterations of that game. So don't think that, like, this is something standard to, like, well, Blizzard or even this industry. This is kind of, you know, standard for all industries. You know, I've myself had developed entire games all the way to the end and just have them not even get released by the publisher for whatever reason. And believe it or not, a lot of it is money. It has nothing to do with the game. It could have to do with, you know, just they had enough money to build the game and then they were hoping and said, okay, we'll bet the bank, we'll bet the bank that we're going to actually, you know, build this, and then the uppers, the suits, will actually then give us enough money to do a proper production and publishing schedule for this. And then they find out, no, actually, we redid the books, we're not doing so well, we're shuttling that division, so all the developed properties. And then usually then they try to sell at least the games to make back something. But this is, you know, this happens in movies all the time. My brother's in Hollywood. NYP 2069, if you remember that. It was the most expensive pilot at the time ever done. Steven Bosco. It cost $6 million, I think, dollars to shoot. This was several years ago. He shot it, you know, big budget, big name. It was supposed to be, you know, they did the entire thing. They finished it, and it has never seen the light of day. It was canceled, and it has never, ever been shown, and has been put in the vault forever. So this is really not that surprising. What is surprising is Blizzard has, you know, and they really, this comes from the top, their management is smart enough to know, you know, and be able to tell, like, which games are going to be hits and which games aren't going to be hits. And not only that, this is the tip of the iceberg. I know of other games that Blizzard was working on that they didn't even mention that were canceled, okay? Here's something of interesting. Did you know, well, I don't think anyone does. Did you know that Blizzard and Capcom were in talks to do games together and, in fact, got very far into negotiations? Did anyone know that? I don't know. They actually, at a point, and this is right before World of Warcraft came out, they were looking into licensing out their properties to other developers to have them create games. And this was right when Ghost was being made. That was the first one they were going to do. They were talking to a lot of other big-name developers. They were going to give a portion, not the main, you know, they were going to do like a side universe of their main franchises and have them do the games for them. And they talked to a lot of people. Some of them went some places, like the Capcom. Some went absolutely nowhere, which I won't even mention. And then some went very far, such as Ghost, where they actually developed the entire game and then, you know, threw it away. Once World of Warcraft came out, they realized, wow, we're going to have more money than we could ever spend for our entire life, so let's just do what we want to do after that. So, yeah, this is really, it's news, but it is not something that should be a shock to anyone. Next up is Banjo-Kazooie 3 has been finally semi-confirmed to be released in 2008. So Shane Kim was at DICE again last week, and he confirmed that will likely be released on the 360 Banjo-Kazooie 3 or Banjo-3E. I'm not sure. They don't actually have, I think the name has been confirmed yet. For those of you who have never played Banjo-Kazooie for the N64, go out and buy it now and play it. It is one of the best platformers of all time. It is, you know, from a mechanics point of view, it's probably a smidge dated. It's also hard, to say the least. It's one of the, especially if you've been growing up. It would be interesting because it's been about 10 years since this thing came out. And I'd be curious to see what kids nowadays that are probably didn't play it, you know, people in their, you know, teenagers and people in their 20s or so, what they think of it. Because I think platformers have generally gotten easier over the last couple of years, which is not a bad thing. Actually, you know, Drake's Fortune, which I'm going to review, and Tomb Raider, you know, in the old days, you had to do a pixel perfect jump. Like every time you jumped, you had to do it absolutely perfectly. If you so much as messed it up one iota, if the camera angle wasn't correct, you would fall to your death and you'd have to do it over and over again. Now they're much more forgiving, and it actually allows you to enjoy the game more, in my opinion. So, you know, Banjo-Kazooie is from the old school where you had very good control, but you definitely had to know what you were doing. But you had a lot of ways to save yourself, so it was kind of a mixture of very exacting and yet forgiving at the same time. But this is a fantastic game, probably one of the greatest endings of all time for any game I've ever seen. I love this game. Love it, love it, love it. So I'm very excited to see the new one coming up. And also, I think it's important for Rare to kind of get back in the spotlight. You know, everyone was talking about Bungie when they left Microsoft, and no one even talks about Rare anymore. I mean, that was a big deal when they were bought. But, you know, they came out with, you know, GoldenEye, and that was kind of it. I mean, you know, obviously Diddy Kong and Donkey Kong Country, those were their big hits. But, you know, ever since then, you know, Banjo-Kazooie, very popular. Donkey Kong Country, pretty popular. You know, Perfect Dark, the original, you know, was good, not as good as GoldenEye. And then since then, really nothing. You know, I even read an interview today, of all things, where they were joking about how poorly Grabbed by the Ghoulies sold. You know, and there's a game that just came and went. And even, you know, I really thought that Viva Pinata was going to do better. I actually just think the gameplay was way too complex for it. Sort of didn't have a good audience. I really liked the game, but it's a kid's game, but the complexity is tough enough that you really have to almost be an adult to play this game. So who is this game for? You know, it's like make a kiddie game, but make it like a complex, you know, simulation game. It didn't make sense. So hopefully they can find their way. You know, they lost a lot of their key members, and, you know, that don't underestimate that. When you lose, you know, a lot of these companies are really made on one or two or three people, you know, and you can't underestimate just what a few people can mean to an entire company. Next up, ESRB reports a lower percentage of mature-rated games. I found this fascinating, especially because you hear so much in the news about M-rated games, blah, blah, blah. But it turns out last year there were 1,563 games that were given ratings in 2007. That was a 22% increase from 2006. E for Everyone was 59%. T for Teen was 20%. E for 10 and Older was 15%. And M for Mature was 6%. That's it. And that was down from 8% and down from 12% in 2005. So the long and short of it is 8.5 out of every 10 games sold last year were rated for kids 13 years or younger. So it does show you that, you know, the vast, not just majority, the vast majority, 85% of all games sold out there are for kids, and, you know, or designed for kids, and the mature rated games, you know, people think like, you know, people think it's like, oh, okay, that's all there is out there. You know, they just get the most press. I mean, as simple as that. And you know what? These mature rated games, I've been talking about this on the site. We've been, you know, I've been trying to make a point of this as someone who has two kids. And, you know, my daughter's getting much older. She is finally, she's 3.5. She's gotten to the point that she plays Nintendogs by herself. I actually was stunned when I saw her sitting there with her own DS sitting in the couch playing it, talking to Taffy, her dog, and, you know, giving her a walk and stuff. And, you know, I am now very careful watching exactly what she does. I never, ever, ever have let her watch me play an M-rated game. I always lock my office. I will never let her see me play an M-rated game until I think she's mature enough to handle it. Now, that's, you know, I don't know, it's something called parenting. But, you know, I'm playing No More Heroes. And let me tell you, that is almost AO. I mean, that game has so much blood, decapitations, people getting limbs severed. I mean, that game, no way. I'm not letting kids go anywhere near that thing. So, yeah, there are games out there, but you know what? I enjoy it. Call me sick. That's the type of stuff. I think it's fun. You know, I'll also play Spore and enjoy that. I also play, you know, more gentle games and puzzle games and enjoy those. Professor Layton, which couldn't be any different than No More Heroes. I love that game. So, but it does show you that, you know, it's not just M-rated games, and it's important, you know, to point out to the masses that, you know, although gaming does have a mature element, the, you know, a vast majority of games being made are actually designed for families and kids. Next up is Puzzle Quest Challenge of the Warlords, which was a huge hit last year. It was a sleeper hit and became a monstrous hit. I've told everyone and their mother to buy this game. It's out for every single platform known to mankind and then some. It's only like $20. Buy this game. It's great. Well, if you like puzzle games and role-playing games, if you're kind of a gamer, you'll like this game. If you're kind of a casual gamer, it's probably, believe it or not, too advanced for you. It's in fact, I think I just figured it out. It is the perfect, it is the casual game for hardcore players. That's probably the best way to describe it. But they are going to have a sequel coming out to this year, as well as a sequel for Ben 10, which I never really played, and Artem's popular Shaun the Sheep character from 2008. So be on the lookout on that. I have a feeling they're going to have this one have a little bit more fanfare than the first one. So I am looking forward to seeing more Puzzle Quest. Next up is Ubisoft was actually won a lawsuit over the producers of Bratz for $13.2 million. This is kind of cool. Ubisoft was originally publishing the Brat games for the original PlayStation 1 and the Game Boy Advance way back in 2003. But then what happened is that the Bratz property became extremely popular, and MGM decided, hey, they wanted to renegotiate this and instead moved the license, gave it to THQ, and then terminated their deal with Ubisoft for some reason, saying, oh yeah, you did X, Y, and Z, and totally, you know, blew them off, saying that, you know, they did something else. They basically just wanted a more favorable deal, and they lied, and they said, yeah, you guys did something wrong, and we're terminating the deal other. Obviously, they sued each other, and arbitrator came up and sided with the game publisher and gave them $13.2 million. On top of that is that Bratz, ironically, after all of that, once they moved to THQ, It actually ended up not even selling that well. It only sold, about 700,000 copies of Rock Angel in 2005, but then 2007, all the Bratz stuff ended up selling less than 100,000 units each. So Bratz has kind of come and gone, I'd say, in its popularity. And the movie didn't even break 10 million. But just to goes to show you, I just wanted to kind of point this out, is that, you know, these lawsuits are really very, very common, and you'd be amazed. You know, I say this all the time, is that a lot of people think that, you know, gaming is just designing games and people doing this for the love of the game, but it's not. You know, they're doing it for money. You know, these companies are in it for money, and they will sue each other to the end of time, and if they could get another penny out of anyone else. And you know, even something as small as Bratz. I mean, who would think that something like Bratz would cause this much angst between two companies? But, you know, when there's money involved, and not just money, but millions of dollars involved, you better believe it. So do not think that this is an industry of just optimists and people and nerds that love their games. Next up, we have Mass Effect, which is going to be coming out for the PC in May. Well, that's kind of the whole news right there. But it's not that surprising. Again, these games all have all games have a life cycle, a sales life cycle. And the general rule of thumb, and this is kind of a loose rule of thumb, is the amount that it sells in the first day is the same amount that it's going to sell in the first week, that it's going to sell in the first month, and sort of the first 3 months and the kind of the year. So, you know, the vast majority of game sales are done within the first month or two, really first 3 months, and that's sort of it. After that, the games really peter off quite a bit. So that's kind of why you'll see, you know, this actually happened with BioShock. You know, remember BioShock, they had that you can only install the game on two machines at most. I think it was two. Yeah, two machines at most. And then they said they were going to lift that copy protection and allow you to do it more. And then several months later, now you can install it on up to five machines if you wanted. And again, they did that because they knew, you know, once people played through it, the life cycle went through, people, you know, everyone played the game. So sure enough, they did it. The Xbox 360 version, they had to definitely announce the downloadable content before they actually announced the PC version, no doubt. Otherwise, people would have been like poking holes in this, saying, oh, how can they come out with the PC version? They haven't even announced the downloadable content, blah, blah, blah. So instead, they released, you know, announced the downloadable content, and then, oh, what a surprise, the PC version's coming out. I personally almost always wait for the PC version of BioWare's games, but, you know, I played Mass Effect. As you guys know, I reviewed it for the show. I have never been so conflicted with a game in my life. I love the story. I'm even reading the book. I think the story is absolutely fantastic, but man, there's so many problems with that game. If you do go onto the BioWare site and see the Mass Effect PC screens, they definitely are taking some things into consideration. They're redoing the inventory system, it looks like. They're doing a couple things different, so it will be more PC-ized than some of their past games. But, you know, and other things people are talking about is, you know, this thing coming out for the PlayStation 3. Well, there's a couple of reasons why it won't come out for the PlayStation 3 and why it will. Why it won't is because, okay, I'm going to let you guys know this. People probably, you know, hear this all the time, but it's 100% true. The PlayStation 3 is a bitch to develop for. It is very hard to develop for. People won't, you know, they don't want to know this, but like Grand Theft Auto, trust me, I talked to the guys at Rockstar. I was just there on Wednesday talking to them. They will not say it publicly, but they are having a hell of a time with the PlayStation 3 version. And, you know, I'm very curious to see how it's going to end up running. You know, they've been using the Xbox 360 version for a lot longer. The whole reason they even came out with the ping pong was as a demo or a test for them. There was a test of their engine so they can even see if they can get, you know, sort of understand the Xbox 360 architecture. So when they made GTA 4, that they would be that much more ahead of the curve. They didn't really have access to the architecture. They didn't have access to PlayStation 3 ahead of time, so they kind of were behind the curve on that, and they've just been having a really hard time. And these guys are some of the best in the industry. I mean, they, you know, their games are seamless. They stream really well. They do a lot with the, you know, with the architecture, so. And, you know, they have to make sure the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox versions are as close as possible. So, I, you know, that no one will ever say that, but I know Take-Two is also pretty, you know, anxious to get this thing out because so far it's cost them over $100 million to develop, you know, GTA 4. But how the heck did I get onto GTA 4? And oh, yeah, so, right. I was like, what? That was a tangent. So, Mass Effect, right. Mass Effect, that's what I was talking about. So, Mass Effect, you know, it's hard to develop for the PlayStation 3, and BioWare, as good as BioWare is, technology prowess they don't necessarily have the best of. They're pretty good. They're good with story. They're good with a lot, but technology, they're, you know, good. They're okay with. One of the advantages of them, you know, getting sold, I guess, to EA is that they now have, you know, they have access to their programmers and their, you know, their technology guys, their engineers, and that's no small feat. You know, now if they want to develop something, instead of them having to bring in talent, they can go to, you know, corporate headquarters and have someone flown up to help them out. And don't underestimate that. Something else that probably is preventing it, they probably have an exclusivity right. Remember, the publisher of Mass Effect was Microsoft, so there's no way in hell that they were going to allow that game to come out for the PlayStation 3 without a certain amount of time passing. So there's an exclusivity, you know, the exclusivity clause in the contract. So by the time it comes out for the PlayStation 3, it could probably be a year from now or maybe a year and a half from now. So, you know, again, I've said it a million times, it's all money. That's all it is. It all comes down to money. Speaking of money, next up is EA Sports extends its NFL deal through the 2012 season. So, Yeah, this, if you remember 3 years ago, EA Sports, when they were really in a dogfight with 2K Sports and Take-Two, and they were losing out, actually, is that Madden just wasn't stacking up to 2K Sports. A lot of people really preferred the 2K Sports football scenario. So EA went nuts. They had to protect the property. It's rumored they spent $500 million to get exclusivity rights for the NFL. And since then, you know, Madden's been okay. It's not been great. And in fact, sales have been going down. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why Peter Moore was brought on, you know, very charismatic, hopefully has a bold leadership of what to do with this franchise. But, they're going to try to, they lock this up. Not that I can imagine another game would be able to easily come in and steal their thunder anyhow, because it takes a long time to develop these games. Someone can't just show up and, even if this license was wide open, just show up and just start designing a football game. But, EA and NFL kind of backed themselves into a corner, because the NFL now has to almost always go with EA every year because, who else are they going to sell it to? No one else is really going to go into this market. So they've kind of limited themselves. I'll be very curious to follow this over the next few years to see how Madden gets developed. And, when you have a monopoly, you don't have to try. There was a lot of complaints last year with that game. Another interesting aspect was the NFL Street, NFL Tour games. They're doing, there's a lot of games that the coach game? I forgot what it was called, the NFL coach game, which everyone hated. They actually hate, head coach. Everyone hated that game. So, hopefully they can really, start realizing that they almost owe it to this franchise to sort of do a better job. Next up, Command & Conquer Red Alert 3. These games are very confusing. Command & Conquer Red Alert 3, it exists. It is coming out for the PC, the Xbox 360, and the PlayStation 3. It looks like it's coming out later this year. It looks like it's not only that, it's going to have three sides. It's going to have the Allies, the Soviets, as well as a Japanese faction. It has a fully co-op campaign mode, which is freaking fantastic. I'm very excited about that. There's also going to be a private beta of the game if you buy Command & Conquer 3's expansion pack, Kane's Wrath, that you'll be invited to. The beta is not supposed to be coming out till the summer, but that means the game is pretty darn far along. Doesn't really surprise me. I've been over there. I talked to the CNC guys. They really have their act together. They really are a good, I'd say a very good development team. They definitely know what they're doing. So I'm not surprised at all the game's as far along as it is. I'm not surprised they're going to do a private beta in a few months. And I'm not surprised if this game comes out this fall or winter at all. For those of you who've never played it, Red Alert 2 is considered one of the greatest RTS games of all time. It was one of the first fast RTSs, I'd say. When it came out, I was really into RTSs at the time. And, games are really slow. It was always the same. It was like, base building. It was kind of a slow, methodical method to actually, get your bases up and running and to do the combat. But then Command & Conquer 2 came out, and man, it was like a blitzkrieg. That thing was fast, and it was fun, and that was the first real fast RTS that came out. It has also Yuri in it. It has some crazy characters in there. Hopefully we'll see all those guys. I'm real excited to see this one announced. And, love it or hate it, Command & Conquer 3, I thought, did a very good job. The multiplayer was fun. And they were faithful to the actual the franchise and the legacy. So I'm excited to see this. Last but not least, it turns out the Marvel Universe Online was canceled. I was actually very disappointed by this, but it was announced as well that, even better, Champions Online is being developed by Cryptic, which is the same guys who did City of Heroes, who did City of Villains, who was developing Marvel Universe Online. Champions, if you're not familiar with it, is probably one of the greatest role-playing pen and pencil games of all time. It's still played to this game. It's been out for a long time. I think it's been out since like 81 or so. It's one of the very first games where you have a point buy system, and it was incredibly powerful yet flexible. and yet customizable. It hit that sort of sweet spot that so many games to this day can't even come close to hitting. Even D&D is having trouble doing that. It's like it had everything. It was simple yet complex. It was totally customizable yet very specific. And it's superheroes, you know. It really was a great system. You can make anything you wanted. So when I heard this, and as long as they're kind of keeping the spirit alive, and I know those guys over there. I've interviewed them on the show in the past, the Statesman, I interviewed them. And they are, if anything, they are hardcore superhero / comic book fans. So just one thing they're going to do is I imagine they're going to be as faithful to the license as possible. And I also think it translates real well. So if you haven't seen, you know, if you haven't picked it up, it's called The Hero System Champions. You can get it at Amazon. Definitely check it out, especially if you're independent paper games. Definitely follow this one. You know, I still love City of Heroes. It's one of my favorite MMOs of all time. I think, unfortunately, its time has come and gone. You know, when it first came out and everyone was playing together, it was great. Now you can go there, it's kind of a ghost town. It's not quite the same. But still, it, you know, if I'd love to have that excitement back from when I was first playing City of Heroes, and that I'm really looking forward to that. So that is it for the news, and let's get to my review for Uncharted Drake's Fortune.
Game review! Game review! Game review!
So my review, as I said before, is Uncharted Drake's Fortune for the PlayStation 3. Some people might find it a little odd, and even I myself am finding it odd, that I'm reviewing a game that came out in November of last year for the PlayStation 3. By Naughty Dog, but I felt it was important because this game is so good that it is actually worth buying a PlayStation 3 for. So I think I owed it to myself to actually review this game to let people know about it. On top of that, this game really kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I know it was in development for a while, but when it came out, I didn't even know it was coming out. And I was having lunch with some of my friends the other day, one of them, which runs a video game website, okay? He actually does this for a side living, you know, for fun. And I told him, oh, yeah, I'm playing a game. He's like, oh, which one? Drake's Fortune. He goes, what's that? Okay? That's how under the radar this game has been. It got, like, no press. I totally didn't even know it came out. So, and I was kind of reluctant because, you know, that's actually, you know, people might not play games that they don't hear about. You know, that's why sometimes really good games fall under the radars, because if they don't get the press, you subconsciously can think, well, if this game isn't getting press, how good can it be? I think that really happened with Psychonauts. It really just did not get the press, and a lot of the press it got was bad. So I think it really hurt sales. I think it's happened many times. Supposedly this game has sold over 1 million copies, so this game is in no way, shape, or form not doing well. But I was, again, as I picked it up, if I played this game last year, definitely would have been in my top three, maybe even number one for favorite games of 2007. But, you know, this game is a Tomb Raider-esque game. It's, you know, done by Naughty Dogs, the same guys who did, Bandicoot, and as well as Jackson Daxter or whatever those guys are. I forgot. I never really liked that game as much as I thought I would. But this is, I'd say, a good example. A good way to sum it up is Tomb Raider meets Gears of War. And I also would say that this was probably the best movie I saw in 2007. That's right, movie I saw in 2007. Why? I've never played a game that played out so much like a movie before as Uncharted. There's not really much to say about the game, is that, you know, it has a Tomb Raider-esque feels, that it's kind of a loose platformer. You play Drake. I won't get into too much about him. There's a shooting methodology, which is very similar to Gears of War, is where you kind of hide behind rocks and then you can shoot people. And you are actually going after some treasures in, you know, an ancient kingdom. Of course, crazy things happen. You have a reporter with you who you kind of have a flirtatious relationship with, and your friend Sully, who's this very, like, funny, cigar-chomping, you know, guy with trouble, you know, around them all the time. And that's sort of the game in a nutshell. But this is one of those rare games, I'd say, is that you guys probably had this, is those games, you know, that you start on a Friday night and then you finish Sunday morning because you couldn't stop playing it. I can think of very, very few games in my life that actually have fallen into that category of I am having so much damn fun that I must finish this game no matter what, and everything else is secondary. That is this game. You know, very few, like Portal's up there, Half-Life is up there, the original Zelda is up there, No One Lives Forever is up there. This is right up there. You know, I got it and I finished it in like 3 days because I just could not believe it. Graphics are fan-freaking-tastic. Again, if you actually want to show off what the PlayStation 3 really can do, this is the game. And I have to lift the hands up to Naughty Dog. It's that I've been in the jungle. I've been in hot, sticky situations like that. Well, not people firing guns at me and, you know, crazy things happening to me. But, you know, really hot, nasty jungle like in the middle of summer. And you can actually almost feel the heat coming from your TV. It's that realistic, and that's how good the graphics are in this game. The story itself is a little cliched, but very well told. And the characters, the voiceovers, they are fantastic. The cutscenes are the best I have seen probably in all of gaming. That's right, of all gaming of all time. They're very realistic. The characters, the animations are about as good as I've ever seen. And if you just watch the cutscenes alone, as I said, it makes a fantastic movie. I would have just been watching this thing. I actually felt like for the first time ever, I was actually playing an interactive movie and where I was the lead character. So, again, I really cannot say enough strong things about this game. You know, the negatives, I really couldn't think of any, to tell you the truth. I mean, some of the story elements don't totally peter out. I'd say the only thing is the combat. You can't, you know, I'd say this is a good thing, too. It's like the combat, there's some areas where you really have to pay attention. You can die very easily, so you will have to really pay attention. Slowly take your time to take out your enemies. If you try to run in there, you will get killed. In fact, the only thing I'd say that really was kind of bad was maybe the last boss battle, which was tedious and really was just a lot of trial and effort, trial and error to get it correct. So, but that was it. I'd say there's really was not much else wrong with this game. It was scary. It was fun. It was exciting. It has amazing, amazing you know, visuals, voiceovers, music, even ways they like let you know you're going correct. They like change the music cue ever so slightly so that you know that you've done something correctly. And if you like adventure games, and if you're looking for an excuse to even try a PlayStation 3, I'd say pick this one up, try it out. I'd be surprised if you can resist buying one afterwards. That's how good this is. 10 out of 10. That's right. I don't give those out a lot, but I really enjoyed this game a lot. So with that, let's get to name that game. So name that game. In the old days, the way I used to do name that game was that I would take a clip from an old game, I would play it, and then I would have everyone write into me, and then the winner would randomly be selected, and then I would actually then give out a prize. It was usually some free gaming swag and send it out to you. However, the last few times I kind of changed it around. And I liked it that everyone was posting on the actual website. I felt it was a little bit more social. It was more fun to read everyone, what they thought of, you know, their ideas. I had, you know, posting what their favorite game was, things like that. And I just felt it was actually a lot more fun because instead of me reading everyone's posts, I felt everyone should read everyone's posts. So with that in mind, I'm actually going to change name that game. And it's going to kind of, I'll still call it name that game, but instead I'm going to have you name games for me. So instead of me doing this, I'm going to have you do this. And how you enter the contest, I'll have the same thing. I'll have free gaming swag. I got a ton. I literally got a closet full. I have so many gaming shirts. If I wore one shirt for every day of the year, I still wouldn't go through them all. That's how many I have. And plus, I'm going to have a ton of stuff from GDC, and I can get a ton just from, I can just write the PR guys, they'll send me stuff. So I'm going to give you some cool, great gaming swag, but this is what I wanted to do. All you have to do is post on this comment section for this actual podcast is just tell me your forum name and tell me what was the hardest game you ever played. That's right. That's going to be what game you have to name for me, which is what was the hardest game that you've ever played. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is because there's been a couple of games going on recently that people have been posting these, like, the hardest games ever. There's this, like, on this collegehumor.com website. It was totally nuts. I think I might have even mentioned this in one of my questions of the week, but I still think it's a good question, is that, you know, what was the hardest game you ever played, why, and your forum name, and that's it. It's random, which is no different than the original name that game, so no one bitch here. Name that game is that I will randomly select someone, and then on the next show, I'll actually, you know, name you, and you win a prize. Yay! And I'll send it over to you, some really cool swag. So, and as for the hardest game ever played, for me, I don't know. It's hard for me to think, because the problem is if I actually played a game that was really hard, I usually stopped playing it. But I'd say probably the hardest game I ever played, but really still enjoyed, was probably maybe, let me think about that. You know, Prince of Persia was pretty damn hard. Fun, though. A lot of fun, but really hard. Easy to die. With that in mind, Karateka, actually, for the for the Apple, if anyone remembers that. Karateka, which is one of the most, you know, beautiful animated games of all time. It's actually, well, you know, same guys who did Karateka also did Prince of Persia, now we think about it. Very hard game. It was a good game. How hard was the game? Okay, at the very end, after you finally finished the whole game, and you couldn't save or anything, you had to go through this whole game, finish it with your guy alive, you get to the girl, and if you run up to her, she kills you. Okay, and the game ends. How about that for hard? That's right. You actually had to walk up to her. There's a walk command. Whoever uses the walk command, as long as you walked up to her, then you'd rescue her. So that was a hard game. And let me tell you, every single person in the world ran up to her by accident, and God kicked in your you know what, and goes down like a sack of potatoes and dies. So that was probably the hardest game that I ever used to play and finish on a regular basis. Man, I love that game, Karateka. So let me know, what do you think your hardest game ever was? Again, just post it, the hardest game, why, your forum name on the comment section, and I'll randomly pick somebody and get you some cool swag. So with that, let's get to show mail. Hey, welcome to Show Mail. This is where I answer your questions. You could just send them to me at feedback@gamingsteve.com, and I'll answer them on the show. You can ask me about anything game-related whatsoever. I always try to answer it. And as usual, I always start off with the audio questions first. If you ever want, just send me an audio question. Try to keep it under 30 seconds. Try to keep them under 30 seconds or so. Someone sent me one that was like 3 minutes long. I can't play it. It's too long, man. So send me one that's 30 seconds or so, and I will play it. And with that, let's get to the first one.
Hi, Steve. This is John McDowell, or as known on the forums, KillerBro85. I was wondering, for the PR letters, do you think that we're only going to get that Spore is coming for the Mac, and that's it? And that the release date is going to be announced some other time in a few months, maybe? Also, do you think a recession in the economy is going to help or hurt the video game industry due to the fact that people will conserve their money or stay home a lot, so they might buy more?
Hey, John, your timing is impeccable. Yes, I know you sent this a few weeks ago, but is Spore coming out for the Mac? Yeah, I think it is, actually. Yeah. No, it's coming out for, I told you, everything known to mankind. Odyssey 2, yep, coming out for that. Vetrix, yep, you got it. And television, you bet. The release date, you know, that's September 5th or 7th, depending on where you live. And recession, will it hurt video games? This I've been hearing a lot about. Will a recession in the U.S. hurt video games? And people are saying, are video games recession-proof? There's a lot of schools of thought on this one. I think they are, sort of. What I mean by that is that, well, people who want to play video games, they're going to find ways to play them. What does that mean? Well, piracy is one way, believe it or not. You know, if you have less money, you're going to still want to play that game. So piracy might increase, especially PC piracy, because, you know, you might not have cared about, like, figuring out how to do BitTorrents and things like that before. But when you don't have enough money and, you know, some game is coming out and you want to play it, you're going to probably start looking into how to do that a little bit more. So I imagine that's one way that's going to happen, which is also why something like Spore, which I think is kind of immune to piracy because you're going to have to go online to register it, and you can, well, they don't have to, but I'm pretty sure you're going to. That's kind of just my speculation. They're going to do everything in their power to make sure there's as little piracy as possible. And with something like Spore, you have to go online if you want to share the content. So it kind of forces you to buy a legitimate version of the game. What else? People that, you know, games people normally wouldn't, you know, buy are probably not going to buy. So the AAA titles are going to be that much more important now. They're going to probably sell that much more. You're not going to buy, you know, you're not going to try out as many games perhaps. Something else is that people will probably buy a lot more used titles now. You know, something that, you know, some people just don't buy used games. You know, I personally, I hate to say it, I kind of do every so often. A good example, I went to the store. I was going to buy No More Heroes, and the guy walked in and he goes, I only got one, and it's used. And I was like, you know what? I've been looking for this game all over the place, and I can't find it. So, you know, so be it. The developers hate that. And because every time a game is sold used, it's money that's not going to their pocket. So I always try to support developers and buy new games. But I guarantee that, you know, in the recession, no one's going to be thinking about the developers. They're only going to be thinking about themselves. So I imagine more used games. But overall, with the writer's strike, with less TV, with the fact that we're going into the summer and there's, you know, people like, oh, there's no more AAA titles. Yeah, right. There's always AAA titles. You got Spore coming out. You got the new Grand Theft Auto coming out. What else? Oh, Fallout 3. Every year, there's always AAA titles. It's just how many they're going to be. And not only that, there's a lot of people out there buying Wiis, okay? I was going to mention this before. I forgot. My father just bought a Wii. In fact, this weekend I'm going there to set it up for him. And the last system he ever bought, I think, was an Atari 2600 when I was a kid. Wow, it's getting mentioned a lot this podcast. But yeah, the Wii, I mean, everyone I know, I was talking to friends of mine, I was like, oh yeah, I gotta call you back. I'm playing Wii Sports with my kids. These are friends of mine who would never play video games. And not only do they play video games, they have Wiis. Are they gonna go out and buy games? No, but just the fact that many more people have game systems in their houses, you know, that's just one more person that will buy a game. So, you know, if everyone in the country has a Wii and everyone buys one game a year, that's still going to sell a heck of a lot more than if all the hardcore gamers have their systems and they buy 10 games a year or even 20 games a year, because there's just not enough of them. And, you know, I think the video game industry will be fine. However, I will be curious to see what the type of games being released for the different platforms, because we're about to get hit by a flood, an absolute flood of Wii games that you will not believe. It's going to be like the PlayStation 2 days, or even the PlayStation 1 and 2 days, but worse. Next up, I have another question from Joe. Let's listen to it.
Hey Steve, it's Joe here, or the Dead Herring on the forums. Just wondering what your views on the Unity game engine. If you go to unity3d.com and download the web player, you can view this little tech demo of a tropical paradise. You can run around, look at the birds flying in the sky and their reflections in the water. I was wondering, what are your views on this? Do you think this will eventually become the main player in browser-based games? Or do you think Java and Flash are going to be the kings for a long time to come? See you, mate. Great show. Keep it up.
Hey, Joe. So what do I think of the Unity 3D game engine? And do I think it'll take over browser-based gaming versus, like, you know, Flash and Java? For those of you who don't know, Unity 3D is a full 3D environment that works within your browser. So you could actually play, like, Far Cry, or you could play Crysis inside your browser. Now, not Crysis, but you get the idea. You could play it right inside your browser, and it looks fantastic. It really is beautiful. It works. And do I think it's actually going to take over? Maybe. What? Now, the reason is because they're not the only game in town. They're one of the first games in town. But just this week, Instant Action, I got my invitation to play Instant Action. Instant Action is designed by Garage Games. And Garage Games writes a lot of tools for a lot of developers out there. And this is their, you know, this is their 3D tool. So they're not the only game in town. You know, there's Unity 3D. Now there's Instant Action. I'd be very stunned if Flash and Adobe wasn't working on something themselves. So either one of two things is going to happen. One of these is going to become king and will probably get bought by Adobe and then integrated into Flash, which is probably the most likely scenario. And to be honest, probably the end game for Instant Action or Unity 3D is they probably actually want to get bought out by someone like Adobe or Google or someone. Or someone like Google or Adobe is actually developing their own, and then they're going to push theirs. And then, you know, like any other war, one will come out on top for whatever reason. You know, if someone like Google comes out with it, and then they manages to push it into something like, I don't know, 3D views within Google Maps, well, you know, that's the one that's probably going to win, even though it has nothing to do with gaming. And, you know, then it could be used for gaming as well. Although that'd be pretty cool if you can, like, use Google Maps, like, 3D and, like, use, like, Marble Blast, like, rolling it through, like, you know, your streets or over your house and stuff. Actually, that would be pretty darn neat. So that's what I think is going to actually happen. But this is, you know, this is starting to become more and more popular. If you try, definitely try it out. Try out Unity 3D. Try to get into Instant Action because it is fun. It's one of the few times where you sort of have the magic of gaming back. You're like, wow, this is so cool. I got 3D graphics that look as good as, you know, any 3D game I have in my browser. Multiplayer games. It's really fun. So, you know, of course, then after a few months, of course, that excitement, I'm sure, will fade and you'll be all jaded. Gamers like we always become. Thanks a lot for your question. Next up I have, I think I'm done with audio questions. Oh, just two? Yep, just two this week. So I have Nicholas, and he wrote me, "Hey, Steve, I was wondering what your thoughts are on Fallout 3. Do you think it'll end up like Tactics or will be a worthy successor? Thanks for the great show." I actually wrote to them today. I wrote to Bethesda and to see if they were doing anything at GDC for Fallout 3. It doesn't look like they are. So hopefully I'll be able to play it pretty soon, give you a hands-on demonstration or my thoughts on it. But Fallout 3, I think it's going to be freaking fantastic. I mean, come on, it's built in the Oblivion engine. Everything they learned about Oblivion, this is what you have to do whenever you think about it. It's like you have to put together different components and think about it. You have someone like Bethesda who knows what they're doing. They obviously did a great job with Oblivion and really did their stuff. So they have very good developers. They have the technical expertise big time. They have the experience that they learned from Oblivion, and now they're going to, you know, put it all together into Fallout 3. Yeah, I think it's going to be a slam dunk home run. And on top of that is I don't think they're going to release the game until they really feel it's done. And if there's something that these guys are, is patient. You know, you don't release games like Oblivion that have hundreds and hundreds of hours of work if you're not patient. You know, they very could have easily released that game a year ahead of time with a lot less content, but they didn't. So this game will be massaged until it's done. I hope it comes out this year. I really pray it doesn't get delayed. There hasn't been a ton released on it, so that kind of sometimes gets worrisome. But I also know the way Bethesda works, they usually don't give out that much. So, again, I'm going to try to find out more, but I'm excited. I love Oblivion. I think the engine's great. I love the Fallout universe. You put the two together, what can go wrong? Except everything. But besides that, you know, I think it's going to be good. Thanks for your question. Next up, I have, "Hey Steve, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the now defunct Troika Games, especially their three games. Keep up the good work." So if you remember Troika, if I'm pronouncing it right, probably not, they're the ones who created Fallout. What a coincidence. They also did Arcanum of Steamwork and Magic Obscura. They also did the Temple of Elemental Evil, and they did Vampire the Masquerade. So they, you know, they're development house for adventure games. They then went out of business on February 24th, 2005. I don't know which three games you're talking about. I'll kind of take those that I mentioned. Fallout is Fallout. You know, it's one of the greatest games of all time. I'm not exactly sure why, though. Don't get me wrong. I actually do really love Fallout. I think it's a great game, amazing universe. But when it first came out, I remember everyone was like just going gaga over it. And I don't know what I was playing at the time, but I thought it was good. I definitely liked the game, but I didn't think it was like the best game of all time. Maybe I'm just jaded, but I've actually just played it again recently, and it's definitely good. In a weird way, I think Fallout 3 is probably going to far eclipse Fallout for gameplay and just innovation and enjoyment factor. Arcanum of Steamworks and Magic Obscura. That game was supposed to be great. It was like a steampunk game. It was really, everyone's looking forward to it. Came out and it was kind of, eh, it was all right. It didn't quite live up to the hype. And that's kind of where you started to maybe see, like, maybe this guy's were a one-hit wonder. Maybe they just got lucky. The Temple of Elemental Evil was not supposed to be that great. I didn't even play it that much, so I can't really talk about it. And Vampire the Masquerade was actually a pretty darn good game, but it was too late by then. You know, the sad fact is, to really be a good developer, you have to kind of be good at everything. It's like, you can be a good game designer, but a really bad businessman or business person. I've seen this many times. You can do the other way. I've seen very good people that are very good at business that have cruddy games, and there's a lot of those out there. You know, you can see the shovelware games coming out. You know what? They're making a lot of money on those games. Those games might stink, but they managed to sell them because they got a name, like, you know, with them, like Jaws. If I told you how much Jaws sold, I think you'd be sick, okay? That was one of the top-selling games of all time. That game made so much money, it was disgusting. That game was terrible, but it sold because the people who did it were good businessmen. They were not good game developers. And, you know, you have to have the very rare combination of, like, the Blizzards and the BioWares of the world, that they have really good game really good game developers. They're really good businessmen, and then, quite frankly, they have luck. You know, they just have that luck factor too. Their game just gets picked up by the right magazine, gets the right interview, starts getting the right press, starts getting the right buzz, and before you know it, it becomes the next best thing. So, next big thing. So, you know, I feel it was sad that what happened to them, but in a weird way, I almost think, you know, survival of the fittest, the best survive. So be it. You know, maybe if their games were a little better, maybe if they hooked up with a different developer. But, you know, if they were still that good, they should actually be able to get through it. I mean, Peter Molyneux is a good example. I mean, this guy has gone through so many companies and has fought around so long. It's kind of amazing. And, you know, this guy, you know, love him or hate him, he actually is a fighter, and he manages to get games done because he just keeps going at it. So, you know, I'd like to see, you know, this happen with these guys, but I don't know if it will. Next up, oh, this is a great question. Hey, Steve, I need to get a component switch box for my TV, and I've been having a heck of a time trying to find one in stores. I've only been able to find one. I bought it and ended up getting squiggly line across the top of my screen, and my 360 wouldn't even work at all, so I'm turning to the internets to find one. I was wondering if you had any suggestions for what features to look for. Thanks. Keep it up. Justin. So, yes, there's a company, it's called Zektor. I love that name. Zektor. Z-E-K-T-O-R. Zektor.com. They make the best component boxes in the world. The one that you want is the HDS 4.1. Okay? It's $260. It ain't cheap, but this is not a cheap component, okay? The ones you buy at Best Buy and the ones you buy in the store don't work because they're made of crap, all right? It's really that simple. These things are not, the switch boxes are fairly complex technology, and you actually need some serious components in them. Okay, when you get one of these switch boxes, they're very heavy, and you're wondering, wow, what are they putting in these things? Because there's a lot of components in there, okay? There's a lot going on, and you can't buy these things on the cheap, okay? If you buy them on the cheap, you're going to get squiggly lines or it won't work at all, okay? You can't, especially nowadays. You know, in the old days with the crappy cable, sure, but if you want HMDI switchers, which actually, believe it or not, are easier since it's digital, it either works or it doesn't, and they sell those too, or you want, you know, composite, I always forget which is which, HDTV, there we go, the safe one, HDTV, you know, cabling, that's the way to go. They are by far the best. There's the 4.1, which allows you to switch up to 4 items, so I myself use that. I have it on my cable box on set on 1. I have, I think, what is it? Yeah, my Xbox 360 is number 2, PlayStation 3 is number 3. Aha, I didn't even notice that. And my Wii is number 4. And the nice thing is you don't really have to set up any others because, like, I play all my PlayStation 2 games on my PlayStation 3. My Xbox, I actually, my old Xbox original, I just plug that right into my TV whenever I want to play that. And then the Wii can play, you know, all the old games. So that's all you really need. You can get away with that. DVD player, I actually just use my Xbox or the Blu-ray player on, you know, my PlayStation 3. So that's what I use for that. Another way you can go is that you can actually buy a receiver and use that. That's probably the better way to go in the long run, because the receiver can take all those inputs and it puts it through the stereo system that you have there. So, you know, if you're a mutant like me, and I actually have it go through my headphones, I don't even have a receiver. I just listen to all my games through a wireless headset. It's actually a Dolby Surround sound headset that's really good. You can find it on Amazon. I think it's like $300. But Zector, by far the best and the cheapest. These are industrial strength. You can get these component boxes. They can cost thousands of dollars. So if you think $260 is a lot, it's not that much. On top of that, you could buy a remote for it, which is great. It's only $19 for the remote. And it also has universal code. So if you have a universal remote, you can record, you can program it. So it's great. I'm just sitting there whenever I want to play a game. I love wireless. And I just pick up the controller. I can turn on my, you know, Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, or Wii. I use the remote control, click, I switch over to the game I want, I put on my headphones, turn them on while I'm playing a game. When I'm done, I switch it all back. So that is the way to go. So good question, man. Next up, I got Brad. He writes me, Steve, I have a few questions. With the success of the Wii and all, why is it that everyone's bashing it so much, saying how bad the graphics are and that it's not a PlayStation 3 or an Xbox 360, of course, is not the Wii. Games like No More Heroes literally takes advantage of the Wiimote, and the graphics are fantastic. How do you see this bashing? Is it because the GameCube didn't see so well? And this is his first question. I'll answer that, and I'll get back to the second question. A Wii bashing? You know why? Because it's not hardcore, because it is a family-friendly unit. It's Nintendo. People love to bash on Nintendo. You know, they have to bash on someone. You know, the Xbox was seen as really hardcore, and quite frankly, it's succeeding. You know, this is the thing that people didn't want. They're like, you know, it's like, oh, they like kick down their buddy, their friend. Ah, we could always bash on Nintendo. It's a kid's unit. No one ever likes you. Ha, ha, ha. And now, oh, man, what's going on? It's like selling a billion copies, everyone's playing it, it's now unbelievably successful, Nintendo's making more money than God knows, my worst nightmare. Who knows? I'm not a psychiatrist, I couldn't tell you exactly why people are doing that, but I'll tell you another interesting aspect is developers. A lot of my developer friends, they freaking hate the Wii, and I'll tell you why, is because it's underpowered and it's driving them crazy. You know, whenever you develop games, traditionally what you do is you develop for the lowest common denominator. So if you have three systems, you develop for the worst system, and then you can upscale things. So if you develop for the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3, they'll often develop for the Xbox 360 as the target platform, because they know anything that runs on the Xbox 360 will probably run on the PlayStation 3 with a lot of coaxing, but it will run. With this, they can't do that. They can't make something for the Wii and then have it run on the 360 or PS3. It'll look like absolute crap. So instead, they do the opposite. They make it run for the 360, and then they have to somehow manage to get it into the Wii, and with its limited graphics capability and limited programming and limited AI and, you know, memory and all that, it's driving them absolutely nuts. So they really have to develop now two entirely separate games, and because it's so freaking popular, they can't ignore it. So it's driving them nuts. It's actually driving them crazy. So don't be surprised. A lot of the people who hate the Wii is actually the people who are making games for it, because it's giving them a lot of extra work. Publishers too, they, you know, you've been hearing things like a couple of weeks ago, there was a new story about how they really want to have just one console. Yeah, no kidding, they want to have a console, because right now they have to have entire production budgets to do a Wii game, especially if they really want to do it right, is they have to come out with the game specifically for the Wii, not just a game on the Wii, but specifically made for the Wii. And then a game made specifically for the Xbox 360. And then they have to take it and they upscale it and reprogram it to work on the PS3. So they are going crazy. This is probably one of the toughest generations ever. For, you know, last time then, they just ignored the GameCube. And they would come out with the game on the PlayStation 2. And then they would, you know, make it all pretty for the Xbox. Now they make it for the Xbox 360. They somehow manage to figure out how to make it somehow work on the PlayStation 3. And then they either really dumb it down and make a total crap for the Wii, or they have to just program it from scratch and redo an entire game for just the Wii. And it's driving them absolutely nuts. But You know, that's kind of where some of the Wii bashing is coming from. But you know what? They can bash it all they want, but they're going to be laughing all the way to the money tree because that thing sells a heck of a lot. Next is, secondly, why is it when a game comes out on the Wii and then comes out on the PlayStation 2? This seems like PlayStation 2, I think you meant something else. This seems to me the games never get intended for the Wii, but then the publisher cash in on the Wii. Yeah, you're right. That's your question? Yes. They do come out with games and that they never really intended to come out of the Wii and they just sort of cram it on there and they hope it makes some money. Yep, that's your answer. You answered yourself. Thanks, Brad, a.k.a. Laserbyte from the forum. So there you go, Brad. You answered your own question. Very good. Next, I got Jesse up. I got to wrap this up. Next is Jesse, and he writes to me. He's like, I've been a PC gamer for since the early days. Something I noticed that seems to be a recurring event in the industry is the fear death of PC gaming. You mentioned this topic in your shows. However, I feel there's an aspect that I haven't heard mentioned which bears mentioning. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. And then you write about 15 paragraphs going on and on about all this fun stuff. So basically, his summing up is, I see PCs fall in the background during each console launch period and then come back into the foreground as time goes on. Prime PC gaming market seem to be years building up to a new console launches when consoles are technically inferior. What are your thoughts? Is this trend, you think, accurate? Thanks. Jesse. So, yeah, well, I don't know necessarily that the consoles and the PCs are going in the cycle where, like, oh, PC games are coming up when consoles are going down. I think the news is just skewered towards PC games because at that point, usually people are more excited and talking about the new console, and sort of games at the end of a console's life cycle just don't get as much press. So I don't think if you actually looked at the sales that supports it, and for you to look at a true life cycle, you have to ignore press, you have to ignore hype. All you have to do is look at hardcore raw numbers and data. That's it. Data is the king, and I don't think the data supports that. So, and as for PC gaming to be dead, I don't think it's dead, but to be honest, it's definitely dying. And people could go on and on and say, oh, it's not dying. Look at Spore. Look at all these MMOs. It's not dead. It never will be. Never. Never, ever, ever. They're always going to be getting games for the PC, but you know, when it comes to development, I talk to developers about this all the time. They're going for consoles, and I'll tell you why. They're a lot easier to develop for in the long run. You know, they have whole QA departments. They have one platform to develop on. They have the companies that will actually help them develop. You know, if you want to develop on a PC or on your own, if you want to develop on the Xbox 360, you call up Microsoft. They will help you out. They will help you do things. They'll help you do the engineering if you want. So, and more importantly, you know, your average schmo, and, you know, I'm talking about Ma and Pa general, they will buy console games more often than PC games. Don't believe me? Go to Best Buy on a Sunday and just stand there. I swear to God, I do this all the time. You think I'm nuts? This is how you do market research. You stand there and watch. And I was just in Nintendo World Store on Wednesday. I actually was upstairs watching parents, you know, in there, and these are people definitely in their 40s, 50s or so, mothers mostly, going in and going through the Wii and looking at the games, picking up a lot of these games that you and I would never play in a million years, these kids' games, and buying them. And you have to just watch that pattern. You know, that's what they're doing. They're going to go and they're going to get these console games because they know it's safe. You know, it's more familiar to them. It's like a record or something. You know, it's like a DVD. You know, to them, it's a very, you know, safe experience. PC games, not so much. You know, PC, I think, is going to be the market of the hardcore for a while and the MMO player. But I'm going to tell you something else. This is where it gets, oh, I love this word, interesting. Right now, you have kids that are growing up on webkins, that are growing up in virtual worlds, and there's a lot of them. There's millions and millions of them. All you can imagine how many kids are playing webkins and these like junior MMOs. What do you think is going to happen when they get older? You think they're going to graduate to not just consoles? No, they're going to graduate to older MMOs. They're going to play, of course, like RuneScape and World of Warcraft and other games. So I think, in a weird way, the PC gaming market is going to continuously get bigger. There's always going to be a market for the PC games. It's just the type of games for the PC. It's going to change. You know, until recently, first-person shooters didn't even exist. You know, PC games were mostly adventure games. Now you can't find adventure games at all at the PC. And role-playing games, point-and-click adventures, things like that. Then it was RTSs and first-person shooters. Now, RTSs are coming out on the consoles, and they work. First-person shooters are coming out for the consoles, and they work as well. So now it's MMOs. And that's why you keep hearing that. Like, it's like, oh, when's the MMO going to come out for the console? Because if a successful MMO comes out for the console, PC will be in trouble. I will say that. You know, right now, casual games, browser games. So it's never going to totally die. But it is going to modify and change, and the focus of what people play on the PC as opposed to on the console, or as opposed to a mobile phone or portable games or the DS or so forth, is just going to change. So thanks for your question. You know what? I'm kind of running out of time, so I have one last question. This is Spore related. Let's see. Lobster writes me. You've written me before. It seems that whenever we see a new creature, it always more or less has the same two to four legs, one tail in the back, 2 to 4 arms, and a head in the front, 2 main sensory organs in the head. Sometimes it's got 2 mouths or tail or funny shaped or weird coloration or something vaguely creature-esque, but I've never really seen anything the caliber of Will Wright's earlier creations with forked arms and legs or anything even more unusual. For instance, is the game capable of animating a creature with a very small, short body and 5 unpaired arms that legs placed at equidistance at its midline all the way around the body, like a 5-pointed star, things like that, would roll like a wheel, etc. He writes on and on and on. Second of all, I know the game went to actually populate your game with creations from other people, but I've gathered you don't really get to accept or reject alien races as you populate other planets. They're just there. So what happens if someone makes an extremely complex life form that fits my style but is so graphically intense that it brings my computer to the knees? I'll answer those two questions, get to your third one. So can you make anything? Yeah, you can. You can make anything. You don't believe me? Go to Kotaku. Kotaku just did a video shoot where they showed that people made buildings that look like one of the buildings looked like a Christmas tree with presents underneath, and that was an actual building. You would think it's a Christmas tree with presents, but no, it's a building. Someone made a UFO that looked like Santa with a sled and reindeer, okay? Trust me, you can make anything, all right? Anything you want. This game will allow you to pretty much do it. It is extremely powerful. If you want to make a creature with 1,000 eyes, you can do it. Don't forget, there's prices to be paid. They kind of try to do balance in the game, is that the more, you know, limbs and items you put on the game, first, the creature won't do very well, and second, it will cost a lot of money, and third is that, you know, it will, how will animate? I think they're going to do a pretty good job with that. Second of all is, will the game allow you to intellectually populate creations, other people, stuff like that? You can filter. If you want to have, I'm not going to repeat the quote because this is a family safe show, but if you want to have flying genitalia, you're going to other genitalia in your world, yes, you can do that, okay? That is allowed. It was a direct quote. You just have to turn off the filters. But one thing you can do is also say who you like. Who are your favorite creators? So you can also you know, tilt the population of your other worlds with other people that you enjoy. Something else is that bring your computers to your knees. I think, again, there's a lot of caps in the game that really won't ever happen. It's like if the game runs, the game runs. I will be curious to see how well it runs, because if you remember The Sims, when The Sims first came out, I had a killer computer too. I had one of the fastest computers ever. That thing brought my computer to its knees, okay? I could barely run The Sims. So Spore seems pretty ambitious. I'd be curious to see, you know, how good a computer is. But I tell you, computers are cheap, man. You can buy a really good computer for not a lot of money. So this might be an excuse you've been waiting to upgrade. Here you go. So if it brings you to your – if you're playing Spore and you can't play it adequately because it's bringing a computer to your knees, time to buy a new computer. Question the third. I seem to recall back in earlier videos, the creature stage, you start out swimming around in the ocean, then you can cross and move on to land. In recent previews I've seen, as well as cutscenes and screenshots, it seems to suggest you go straight from the cellular stage to land. Is it possible to create an aquatic race, one that never evolves, goes on land, or goes on land, turns to the ocean like a whale? Thanks for your time. As far as I know, no, you can't make an ocean-based life form. I don't know if that's changed. I think originally they were, but I haven't seen that in a long time, so I don't know if that's still in there. I hope it is, but I'll ask them. I'll see them. That kind of, you know, like they kind of going back and forth on things. Supposedly you were able to do things on the water, but I've never seen it since. And the last time I heard about that was years ago, so I don't know if that changed or not. I'll try to get true confirmation one way or the other. As for the jump, yes, do you know the jump between the cellular life form and the land life form is very abrupt. It just sort of shows your thing walk out of the water and then voila, you're on the land. As far as I know, that's how the game works. They'll probably, now the game is getting done, this is kind of where you do what's called the polish cycle. So they'll probably add things like, you know, cutscenes, animations, transitions. This is when you do transitions. They probably just didn't have time to do them before. So this is where you would see all that stuff come up. So once again, thanks for your questions. Definitely have them coming, especially the spore stuff, because you know what? I'll see if I can get a maybe. It actually gave me a good idea. I'm not going to say anything. But write me your questions. Just write me at feedback@gamingsteve.com, and I will try to get them on the air. And let's get to final thoughts.
Gaming Steve's final thoughts.
So final thoughts this week is I'm going to Game Developers Conference. I think it's like my 10th one. Very excited. It's sort of fun yet horrible at the same time because it's a crap load of work to do this thing. Let me tell you, it's a long day. It's fun. People are like, oh, poor little Gaming Steve's got to go there. You know what? Anyone who's done conventions, they know what it's like. It's fun and exhausting and tiring all at the same time. Kind of like going to Disney World with your family, I think. Kind of like that. What else going on? Don't forget Spore. I'm looking for some new writers. If you specifically a Spore writer, if you want, just write me feedback@gamingsteve.com. I'll give you all the info, or you can go to the forum. And last but not least. Man, I know a lot of people have the red ring of death. Even myself, I lost my Xbox 360 once. PlayStation 3 has been absolutely fine, but no one talks about the Wii. I have lost not one, but two Wiis, and my Wii just came back the other day, just came back 2 days ago. And the first time it died, it wasn't so bad. I actually was able to get my games off of it, but that was a while ago. And the second time it died, I was really excited. I got No More Heroes. I came home, I put it in, and it would load up the warning screen and then freeze and nothing ever happened. So I called them up. They're very nice. Nintendo tech support could not be nicer. They said, ship it out. We'll give you a free shipping label. And less than a week later, I got my Wii back and they said, don't worry about your data. If you can't copy it off, because I couldn't copy it off because I couldn't see anything. They say, yeah, we have a more than 90% chance you'll get your data back. I got out the Wii. I looked at the report and sure enough, at the very top was a big circle to say we could not retrieve your data. So yeah, that's right. I lost everything on my Wii. I lost all my save games. I lost everything. All my virtual console games. You name it. So any of you who are my friends, it's gone. That Wii is gone. I got to redo my code. Gone. Everything. All my Miis, gone. Everything is gone. So I know this is, there's a lot worse things. People lose their houses and floods and fire, and that's obviously a million times worse. But this has never happened to me. It's kind of horrible yet liberating in a weird way. But I'm just curious if this has happened to anyone else. This is, again, I'm pretty much a big stickler for backing up. I tell you now, if you have a Wii and you have virtual games and stuff out there, get an SD card. Put it in and copy everything. Okay, do that right now because it just happened. No, it just was. It poof. It just died. I mean, it just the fan was working fine. My other one, the first one that died, it actually the fan died, and I was getting pixelating artifacts on the screen. It was really annoying. But they gave me a brand new one, no problem. Actually, a refurbished one, no problem. Of course, then the refurbished one died. But man. Definitely back up your save files. I cannot stress this enough because it's like Super Mario Galaxy had like over 100 stars, gone. Zack and Wiki, I got pretty far. I almost got to the very end, gone. Metroid Prime 3, gone. Everything gone, gone, gone. All gone, all gone. Everything's dead. Oh, man. So, oh well. I mean, I guess I don't have a ton of free time anyhow, but I really wanted to see the end of Super Mario. I guess I'll just have to start playing it again. And unfortunately, I do have a Zelda save, but what am I going to do with some of these games? And that wasn't even my save. That was my friend's. So he's going to kill me. Anyhow, so moral of the story is always back up. Okay, I tell everyone this. And if anyone,
I bet you, it's funny, I bet you we'll be seeing that soon. In fact, I bet you there's some money in that. A backup service for your 360, PlayStation 3, and Wii. That's actually not a bad idea, because, I mean, I personally already have a backup. I use Mozy for my computer. It's $5 a month. It backs up my entire computer every single night. It's great. It does it through the internet. Fantastic. It's got Blowfish encryption, which is, like, toughest around, so it's impossible to break. But I really wish there was like an automatic backup system, even if it just backed up to my computer. Someone who's out there who's an engineer, get cracking, okay? And let me know when you do it, because that's a good idea. I just gave someone out there a $1 million idea. Maybe I'm going to do that myself. Not a bad one. So anyhow, I will be talking to you at GDC. I'm going to be doing coverage like crazy there. As you all know, I usually do my daily show. I try to find someone to do the show with. I've been trying to line up some new guests, some new guest hosts. I have a couple crazy ones out there. I've been writing them emails. It's really more of a question of finding them and doing it. But look for me next week. More podcasts, and you guys know what to do with. I will talk to you later. See ya. Bye.
You've been listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, hey, what does this button do?